choice by the Prophet in the Ahlul Bayt in general. Regarding this, a very specific tradition has been related from the Holy Prophet, right? This tradition states that the Prophet was aware of surgery, but he disapproved of it, and he didn't, want, his followers to take resort to this form of the remedy of ailments. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at surgery as a means, as a legitimate means of the remedy of ailments. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
In the limelight.
Unexploded Israeli regime ordnance is scattered throughout the Gaza Strip, with at least 1,200 unexploded bombs reportedly found in 2021 in Gaza. These bombs have disabled a part of the population of Gaza and has deteriorated their living condition in the blockaded Gaza Strip. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Kefah al-Zibda family has a 200-square-meter plot of agricultural land near Absan al-Kibra, a town in Gaza. In 2006, while tending to a crop of vegetables, which he sells at a local market, al-Zibda spotted a round metal object covered in something like copper, sitting atop the soil. As soon as he touched it, it exploded. His cousin heard the explosion and called an ambulance. Unexploded Zionist regime ordnance is scattered throughout the Gaza Strip, with at least 1,200 unexploded bombs reportedly found in 2021 in Gaza. Al-Zibda was 18 at the time of his injury. He is now 34 and partially paralyzed. And while he was lucky to survive the explosion, he has spent the past 16 years negotiating life as a person with a disability in the Gaza Strip. He has found that the already extant difficulties of life in Gaza are compounded for himself and others who have a disability. Al-Zibda has both struggled to access resources that would make his life easier and to receive medical treatment that would improve his condition. Between 2008 and 2021, he applied 13 times for a travel permit to the West Bank, and the Zionist regime has rejected every single one of those requests. In 2008, 2 years after his injury, doctors in Gaza told Al-Zibda that his knees were calcifying and that the arteries to his legs were obstructed. He prepared to travel to Nablus for knee surgery, but the Zionist regime refused his permit to travel. He said, "Finally, I had no other choice but to go to Egypt, where I had surgery on my knees, but unfortunately it failed." In 2016, he traveled again to Egypt for another knee surgery, but it also failed, producing no improvement in his condition. Mahmoud Abu Kamal, deputy manager of the Palestinian General Union of People with Disability, agrees that life for people with a disability in Gaza is trying, whether it's traveling outside of Gaza to receive medical treatment or accessing resources like an air mattress. He added, some people with disabilities don't feel they belong to society due to marginalization and challenges they face. After Al-Zebda's initial injury in 2006, doctors advise him to use an air mattress to avoid bed sores, yet even this has proved difficult, he said. Although the air mattress helps me, the electricity outage for 8 to 16 hours daily exacerbates my suffering as I have had bed sores for over a decade. It takes my air mattress 30 minutes to charge and the same period to collapse after the electricity is cut. He has no alternate source of power for when the electricity goes out in Gaza, so he is also unable to charge the battery of his scooter, which requires 10 hours of charging to go 20 miles. When the electricity is cut off, I can't get out of the house if the scooter is not charged, he said. Even when his scooter is charged, the unpaved streets make mobility difficult. Abu Kamal noted that accessibility is an ongoing issue in the Gaza Strip. Abu Kamal said, we discussed the adaptation of public buildings millions of times with officials who always reply that these buildings are old and we can't afford to build new ones. If we get financial aid, we will build new accessible buildings. I had to crawl the stairs all the way up. Yusuf Abu Odeh, 37, has struggled with accessibility issues in Gaza's buildings and on its streets for years. Abu Odeh, along with three of his sisters, has cerebral palsy and requires a scooter to leave his home. In 2021, when his scooter broke, he tried to have it fixed but was told that the replacement parts would be even more expensive than just purchasing a new scooter. He requested a new scooter from Gaza's Social Development Ministry, but his request has not been fulfilled. Since the cost of a new scooter can run from $2,000 to $3,500 in Gaza, which is too expensive for many people who depend on social welfare, Shaksa applied to many non-profit societies to get a replacement, he said. All of them told me they hadn't received funds, but if I had connections, their answer would change. I appeal to the international community to help marginalized people with disabilities in Gaza who don't belong to any political party. We suffer a lot from this situation that the Zionist regime has imposed on us. In May 2021, during a major Israeli regime attack on Gaza, Kefah Al-Zebda was sitting in his house when shrapnel came flying through his windows. He lost two of his fingers as a result, he said. When I called the ambulance, paramedics asked me to walk to the street due to our dangerous, unpaved street. I had to crawl for 200 meters while bleeding. Medical treatment became an even more pressing need for Al-Zebda after this incident. In 2022, he sought the help of Al-Mizan, a Gaza-based human rights group. Al-Mizan petitioned the Israeli regime high court, which permitted his travel to Nablus for treatment on July 10th this year. Al-Zebda's surgery was successful, yet when he applied for a permit for his wife to accompany him during an October surgery, the Zionist regime rejected this permit. He still has not had his follow-up surgery. Samir Al-Manama, a senior lawyer at Al-Mizan, described the Israeli regime restrictions on travel permits for medical treatment as inhumane. He said, "This is an abusive, arbitrary way of treating people with disabilities. Kefah al-Zebda was prevented from travel for no clear reasons." According to the Middle East Eye, Human Rights Watch issued a report in 2020 that said a decade of Israeli regime restrictions have robbed people with disabilities in Gaza of their freedom of movement, as well as access to the devices, electricity, and technology they need to communicate or leave their homes. 3% of the 2.17 million Palestinians in Gaza have disabilities, according to the Palestinian Central Bureau of Statistics. The quality of spare parts for electric wheelchairs and mobility scooters is poor. They are not always available, and their prices are high, said Ali Alhendi, the owner of a workshop for electric wheelchairs. Alhendi said, "The motherboard price is 1,500 shekels, $432, compared to 600 shekels in 2012. The average price of a charger is 800 shekels, $231, up from $100 in 2012. I tried to import second-hand electric wheelchairs and mobility scooters last year from the occupied territories, which banned me from doing so. The prices have tripled and quadrupled because of the Israeli siege. 10 years ago, I used to carry out two or three projects a month for local societies to maintain electric wheelchairs and scooters. Now, I do one every 2 or 3 months." According to the Fourth Geneva Convention, denying disabled people access to hospitals in the West Bank and banning medical equipment could constitute war crimes, said Salah Abdul Ati, a human rights expert and director of the International Commission to Support Palestinian People's Rights.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle.
Today's lesson, ways of keeping secret. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of the ways of keeping secrets in the Islamic lifestyle. We know that Islam gives importance to the secrets of the people, and it says that it is necessary on someone who has the secrets of others to keep it and to save it and to do not share it with the people, to do not disclose it with the people. Therefore, one of the ways which is been said in the Islamic teachings is that we must acknowledge people about the importance of keeping secrets, the advantages of keeping secrets. If we are aware of advantages of keeping secrets, then obviously everyone, whenever they have a secret, they will save it, they will secure it, they will keep it, they will not share it with everyone. Therefore, one of the reasons that today, if we see that we are sharing our secrets with someone, or maybe if the backbiting has become something normal, or it is normalized in the societies, it is only because we are unaware of the importance of keeping secrets. And this is important that when you tell someone about the importance of it, when we acknowledge people, when we tell about the personal life of the people, how important it is, as it is their life, like as it is, as their own personal life is important, therefore people will give importance to the other's life. Generally, we just think about ourselves, and this is the material life, that think about yourself and not the others. So this is wrong. We need to think about others as well when we are living in a society. And the way we keep our own secrets, we must keep others' secrets as well, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the ways of keeping secrets. And we said that one of the ways is to be attentive towards the importance of keeping secret, or to acknowledge people about the importance of keeping secrets. Because if people know about it, then obviously they will struggle in keeping the secrets of the others, and they will not disclose the secrets of the others, or the things that they know about the other's life. We can see, like, for example, Imam Ali alayhi salam has said that jumi'a khayru ad-dunya wal akhirati fi kitman as-sirri wa musadaqati al-akhyar. There are two things in which all the goodness of this world and the hereafter is gathered in two things. Number one, keeping secrets, fi kitman as-sirr, to keep the secrets, to secure the secrets. وَمُصَادَقَةِ الْأَخْيَارِ, and having a good friend, a friend who performs good deeds. So these two things basically have, in these two things, the goodness of the world, this world and the hereafter, it is gathered. On the other hand, he says, for example, like سِرُّكَ سُرُورُكَ إِن كَتَمْتَهُ. He says that in your secrets, there is happiness for you. You know, if I have something and I need to hide from the people, maybe I have done something wrong. I don't want people to know it. It is related to my personal life. And if people know about it, they will think wrongly about me, or maybe they will have another perspective about me. And maybe I'm not like that. So therefore, when, as far as it is being secured, as far as if this secret is not leaked, then obviously I am happy. But when once it is leaked, then maybe it is hard for me to live. Therefore, there are two things. We should not commit such things which make us feel ashamed in the public. On the other hand, if we have secrets, we need to keep it, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
At the start of World War II, both the Axis and Allied forces had poisonous shells. A total 50,965 tons of poisonous agents were deployed by both sides of the conflict, including chlorine, phosgene, and mustard gas. Official figures declare about 1.3 million casualties directly caused by chemical warfare agents during the course of the war. Yet the end of the war was not the end of chemical weapons. They were dumped into the dark and deadly depths of the oceans. I'm Zarin Shajeri, and this is Aperture. From 1917 to 1970, the armies of the world's greatest powers systematically dumped 1 million tons of chemical weapons into our oceans. A military secret so well kept that underwater dump sites remain hidden for several decades. This week's program investigates this untold story of global chemical pollution, which threatens our health, environment, and economy. These deadly poisons are leaking little by little into the sea, threatening fishermen, bathers, fish, and the entire ecosystem. Stay with us for the first part of the program.
I found a report that detailed the movement of chemical weapons from depots and storage areas in the United States in the 1940s, 1950s, and 1960s, that noted that some chemical weapons were disposed of at sea.
If you look at the lake, I mean, everybody's first response is, there's no munitions there. I can't see them. I see this beautiful lake. How can you have munitions? Reality, they're there, and we're paying a price for them.
Time bombs are ticking under the sea. 1 million tons of unused chemical weapons lie on seabeds all over the world, and their contents are leaking. This is an unknown story that cutting-edge science and newly declassified documents are now bringing to light.
Chemical weapons in various forms have a very ancient lineage, but their main military usage has derived from the First World War, where they're used in very substantial quantities. The first major gas attack of any significance was the use of chlorine gas during the First World War across a 6 kilometer front at the Second Battle of Ypres, launched on 22nd of April 1915. Other gases are introduced, but the big breakthrough is in 1917, when mustard gas is used for the first time, and it becomes known as the king of the war gases.
The new weapons attacked the body inside and out. First affected were the eyes, with a severe burning sensation. Then there would be a painful swelling of the lids, followed quickly by blindness, sometimes permanent, caused by ocular clouding. The lungs were assaulted on a cellular level, prompting coughing, bleeding, blistering of tissue, resulting in respiratory distress, pulmonary edema, and death up to 10 days after exposure. The most noticeable effects were on the skin, where red lesions appeared before erupting into raised blisters filled with yellow liquid, severely painful to the touch.
The interwar period is a very strange period for chemical warfare. Most of the programs are secret, and the intelligence agencies know very little about the extent and depth and the innovations. And like intelligence agencies the world over, that when you don't know the truth, you assume the worst.
This is a new arsenal started at the beginning of the present emergency. It is now in production and can manufacture more mustard gas in one day than was manufactured by us in all of World War I.
The Americans acquire eventually something like 51 million chemical shells, or 1 million chemical bombs, 100,000 spray tanks ready for a chemical war. I mean, their production is colossal, 135,000 tons of gas.
The chemical war that everyone was expecting never took place. At the Potsdam Conference, the victorious Allies decided to split up the enemy's stocks and dump them in the seas. This was considered the safest alternative at the time, and they imposed official secrecy on this policy until 2008. Dumpings took place all over the world, in the Sea of Japan, the Indian Ocean, the Baltic Sea, the North Sea, the North Atlantic, and off the Côte d'Azur in France. Our investigation began in Italy with sea dumping in the Mediterranean. Those dumpings were unknown by the public until Gianluca Defoe, a reporter from Milan, broke the story in his best-selling book, Poisons of State. Documents uncovered by Defoe revealed never-before-known details of how chemical weapons from both sides in the war ended up in the sea. As far as the Italian weapons are concerned, on the Allied side, it was a daring air raid that brought their chemical weapons to the seas. On December 2nd, 1943, the German Luftwaffe bombed the port of Bari, and it unknowingly provoked the biggest chemical disaster in the Mediterranean. The Allies kept secret their chemical weapons shipment for fear of handing the Nazis a huge propaganda victory. This secrecy hindered efforts to effectively treat hundreds of Italian citizens affected when a cloud of sulfur mustard gas wafted over the city. We find a similar situation in the north of Europe and the Baltic Sea. During the Second World War, it was a theater of combat for the navies of Germany, Finland, and the Soviet Union. The Baltic is today, without doubt, considered the most polluted sea in the world. Cold War politics were a major obstacle to the scientific study of the effects of chemical munitions in the Baltic. With the fall of the USSR, Baltic states were now free to do the work. The Polish Academy of Science began ChemSci.
We are 11 institutions all around the Baltic Sea. Countries like Sweden, Finland, Germany, Lithuania and Poland. Now the Baltic Sea bottom become a resource. There are more and more pipelines, windmills, cables and so on being laid on the sea bottom. So it's not really safe to proceed without better knowledge. We are basically performing a risk assessment for the dumped munitions from the Second World War, which resides on the Baltic Sea bottom. And we are trying to assess the location of munition, the pollution of the bottom around it, and the impact it might have on the ecosystem. We are at the Bornholm Deep dump site. It's the biggest single dump site in the Baltic Sea. It's about 30,000 tons of munitions dumped here. they believed if we dump it in the Bornholm Deep, when we've got muddy sediments, it will not propagate to other areas of the Baltic, because they thought it is totally inert area. No bottom currents, no water movement, it will stay where it is dumped. Nowadays we know that the salt water which comes from the North Sea travels through this area and is moved to other areas of the Baltic. So if the sediments are contaminated, it can be a point source of contamination which is spreading to other areas in the Baltic. We decided to collect sediments very close to the objects, like half a meter if possible, and we can only do it with the robot, because with the robot we can take sediment samples which will be most probably contaminated with mustard gas or any other warfare agents. Sometimes you are seeing the encasements which are completely corroded, and the actual agent sits on the bottom in lumps. It's leaking into the environment. We do not know the speed of leakage, because some objects are completely intact and some of them are completely corroded. And it seems that sea is degrading it to more stable forms, but some of those more stable forms are equally toxic as original agents. Whereas the mustard gas decomposes to thioglycol, which can be hydrolyzed completely in the seawater to sulfur and carbon and hydrogen, so it's pretty much harmless substances. Whereas those compounds which were based on arsenic oil, they are decomposing to inorganic arsenic, finally. And arsenic is, of course, a poison. We launched like three expeditions now to the dumping sites, collecting fish, cod mainly. And what we have seen is the higher frequency of fish diseases, and also some impact on the genotoxicity, because those compounds are highly mutagenic. So our partners from Lithuania were able to see the mutated blood cells. We didn't yet, at least, detect toxic levels of arsenic in tissue, whereas we've been able to detect the arsenic in urine of fish. So it seems that it's affecting the fish health, but actually not to the extent which makes it dangerous to consumption. There are many pollutants in the environment which can cause similar effects, like organic contaminants, heavy metals, and so on. So it seems that chemical munitions are maybe not a single factor, but a factor which enhances the environmental damage.
First of all, we are interested in that the fishing vessels and the fishing or the fishes are not getting injured by fishing that substances up. And therefore, we encourage them to, by having a regime here in the Danish area where we compensate them economically by paying, in fact, the same amount for the cost of the value of the fish they could sell on the market. Here we have the mustard gas in the middle of the fishes. That is something that has happened through the years, going from fluid to solid mustard gas. We have recent cases, both in Denmark, but also elsewhere in the world, where you see that the fishing vessel, the people that are dealing with the chemical substances afterwards are contaminated and injured. So we still find subjects that contains both chemical substances but also the explosive.
Can you load
in
there?
We have a 24/7, 365 response team ready to go out to sea and assist the fishing vessels that have caught chemical munitions. So that is the unique part of the unit here in Bornholm. The last chemical report that we have was in March this year here, so it's a couple of months ago. That's the only one this year. So compared to in the 90s, where we had more or less between 50 and 100 cases per year, it has gone down.
In recent years, deep-sea construction projects began in the Baltic Sea, and with them came fears that pollution could result with an accidental disturbance of the chemical arms. The Nord Stream gas pipeline had to be constructed around the dangerous zones because so far no European country has taken responsibility for cleaning up the chemical munitions in the sea. Americans who fought two world wars far from their own shores have now discovered a dangerous surprise close to home. United States officials now admit that thousands of tons of their own unused weapons were dumped by the military all around the U.S. coasts.
I was working on a investigation involving the local disposal of military munitions at the local bases when I saw photographs in the 1950s, the 1940s, and the 1960s, of barrels of mustard gas and lewisite and phosgene loaded up on barges being towed to sea. There are photographs of barrels of mustard gas being thrown overboard. The military's records were very sketchy. They were scant. They were conclusive to a degree that they were quite sure that there were a number of dump sites, dozens of them, off of 11 different states in the United States, presumably off of some coasts of some other countries as well. That was an eye-opener. There are three chemical weapon dump sites the U.S. Army has identified to very vague degrees off the coast of Virginia. One of them is right off the coast of Virginia Beach here, where all these people are playing volleyball and laying in the sun. It is in very deep water, presumably around 12,000 feet or so. It's out near the continental shelf. That's where their records indicate this dump site was created back in the 1940s. They can't say with any degree of certitude if it actually is that far out. The reaction was one, I would say, of shock. It was shock within the U.S. population. It was shock within Congress. Congress had no idea this had been going on or that there were potential dangers off of their coastlines. That they were shocked that there was little in the way of active monitoring of these dump sites or in the way, as far as they could tell, of any research being done to confirm their locations or to find other ones that the Army fully admitted that they expected to be out there. They just hadn't have any idea where they would be.
The Nord Stream project is setting new benchmarks. The dual pipeline, which is more than 1,200 kilometers long and runs through the Baltic Sea, links the energy markets of Western Europe and the huge natural gas reserves in Russia.
Baltic Sea fishermen face continuing threats that dangerous bombs or leaked substances will be caught in their nets. Bornholm Island, a Danish island, is in the middle of the Baltic, close to one of the largest dump sites.
I'm fifth generation fisherman on Bornholm. And we have manual, so we can how to deal with this. We have areas where there are dumped chemicals, weapons. The yellow one is a precautionary area, and the red is where we should be extra careful. And you have Bornholm here. You have the Baltic, Gotland in Sweden, and also an area, and a red area for extra precaution.
Thank you.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآن جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان ودعوتك ربي بقرآن.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم.
السلام عليكم respected brothers and sisters, respected listeners, and welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools Network. And here we are again with some of our students from Sevier International School, Brother Hussein Rohullah and Fawad Haider and Brother Hassan Nasrullah. And I'm going to say hello to them, inshallah. Then we will be here with you with our next session. So, hello, Hussein Rohullah. How are you doing?
Assalamu alaikum, sir.
Assalamu
alaikum. Fine, sir. How are you?
Thank you so much. Alhamdulillah. Fawad Haider?
Fine. How are you?
Alhamdulillah. I'm good. Hassan Nasrullah, how are you?
Fine, sir. How are you?
Alhamdulillah. Thank you so much. So, thank you so much, brothers and sisters, listeners. Thank you so much for joining us. So, today, inshallah, the same as our previous sessions, we'll be working on one of the verses of Surah Al-Baqarah and we'll, inshallah, carry on. So, Brother Fawad, Hassan, and Hussein, today, inshallah, we'll be working on ayah number 31 of Surah Al-Baqarah. Okay, so this ayah is talking about a very important challenge. Okay, a challenge between the angels and Adam alayhi salam. All right?
Yes.
A challenge between the angels and
Adam
human being. Yes. Let's see who wins. What do you think? Human being wins or angels?
Human.
Okay, let's see. Okay. So before we start, let's listen to this ayah.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. وعلم آدم الأسماء كلها ثم عرضهم على الملائكة فقال أنبئوني بأسماء هؤلاء
So, Fawad, was it a nice recitation?
Of course.
Okay, great. Did you hear it?
Yes.
So, okay, now I will be reciting, inshallah. Make sure you repeat. All right?
Yes.
Ready?
Yes.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
وعلم آدم الأسماء كلها.
وعلم آدم الأسماء كلها.
ثم عرضهم على الملائكة.
ثم عرضهم على الملائكة
فقال أنبئوني بأسماء هؤلاء إن كنتم صادقين.
فقال أنبئوني بأسماء هؤلاء إن كنتم صادقين.
أحسنتم ما شاء الله. In the previous ayah, we had the story of the caliphate of Prophet Adam alayhi salam, or the caliph of Allah Almighty, that they were the infallibles, the prophets and the imams. Every single person can't be a caliph on earth, okay?
Yes.
We can't even represent ourselves. How can we represent Allah Almighty? It's much difficult, okay? It needs someone who is infallible, someone who has a divine soul, all right? So, in this ayah, there is a challenge for the angels, okay? وَعَلَّمَ آدَمَ الْأَسْمَى Allah Almighty, when he created, okay, human beings, okay, Allah Almighty gave him the knowledge of everything. The knowledge of everything needed for his life, okay? Okay? He gave him some of his knowledge about the عَلَمُ الْغَيْبِ, for example, the unseen world, okay? And this world, okay? And the names of everything, the knowledge, the understanding, okay? For example, we can say that Asma Hussein, Asma has meanings, okay? Look, in Arabic, we say for the names, also we say Asma, names, okay? For example, your name, Hassan, Hussein, Fawad, they are names. They are called Asma, okay?
Yes.
For example, we have Asma'ullah al-Husna. We have the names of Allah Almighty, okay? The yes. attributes of Allah Almighty. But Asma also has another meaning. The interpretation is this, that the knowledge, the understanding, the knowledge of things, this world, the other world, okay? So what did Allah Almighty give Adam? Knowledge.
Yes.
Okay, now let's see who wins the challenge. وَعَلَّمَ آدَمَ الْأَسْمَاءَ كُلَّهَا Allah Almighty taught, okay, Adam alayhi salam everything needed, okay? He gave him the knowledge, divine knowledge. ثُمَّ عَرَضَهُمْ عَلَى الْمَلَائِكَةِ Then Allah Almighty presented them to Adam, to the angels, okay? That he said, Allah Almighty said, أَنْبِئُونِ بِأَسْمَاءِ هَوَلَى Do you know this? Tell me if you know this. Then the angels, because in the previous ayah, the angels said that, oh God, are you going to appoint someone on earth who sheds blood, okay? While we are glorifying you, we are saying tasbih of you, Allah, we're better than him. Why are you doing this? Then Allah Almighty here says, okay, let's see. Do you want to challenge Adam? So the angels said, yeah. Then Allah Almighty said, okay, that tell me, do you know these things? Then the angel said, no. In the next ayah, the angel said, قَالُوا سُبْحَانَكَ لَا عِلْمَ لَنَا إِلَّا مَا عَلَّمْتَنَا We don't know them. Then the Allah Almighty in the next ayah says, okay, to Adam, Adam, come on, say them. Okay? Adam alayhi salam says all of them, and the angels, oh yeah, he's better than us. Okay? Then Allah Almighty commands them to prostrate to Adam alayhi salam, yeah, to do sajda. So our priority, our superiority, okay, our excellence is in our knowledge, in the soul that Allah Almighty has given us. So we are better than angels, and Allah Almighty, هو الذي خلق لكم ما في الأرض جميعا.
So all angels should praise us?
Actually, if it's the command of Allah Almighty, it was the command of Allah Almighty, so they praise us, okay?
If Allah did not command.
No, they do not pray us, okay? They prostrated to us. We will study, inshallah. They prostrated to us for the command of Allah Almighty. Did you get it? Inshallah, talk more about it.
Yes.
So, let's go to the Tajweed rules here.
يبكي يسأل خالقه فأتاه الوحي فأشرق اقرأ اقرأ
Let's recite the Quran.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق
وعلم آدم الأسماء علم تشديد make sure you pronounce it correctly وعلم
yes.
وعلم آدم الأسماء كلها آدم الأسماء كلها right
yes
أسماء ثم إدغام ثم فواد nice question it was okay but I want you to and I say to my brothers and sisters as well who are listening to us refer to the Tafasir book as well okay because we can't explain everything here we don't have that much time
okay
so ثم عرضهم عرضهم راضا Two heavy letters after one another. It might be kind of difficult. عَرَضَهُمْ عَلَى الْمَلَائِكَةِ Again, مَدُّ الْوَاجِبِ الْمُتَّسِلِ Right? مَلَائِكَةِ فَقَالَ أَنْبِئُنَا This rule is important. Hassan, do you see the Nun Sakin?
Yes.
Okay, after Nun Sakin, what letter comes?
Ba.
Ba. So, Hussein, can you tell me what rule we should apply? Nun Sakin plus Ba?
Yes, Iqlab.
Iqlab, great. You gotta change that Nun sound to
meme.
Kind of meme sound.
Yeah.
Fawad, say this. Bi'uni, right? That's it. But make sure you do that Ghunna sound also. Bi'uni. Bi'uni. فَقَالَ أَنْبِئُونِي بِأَسْمَائِي Right? هَؤُلَاءِ Three mad. All of them are? Wajib.
Yes.
Actually, هَؤُلَاءِ it's not wajib. Do you know why? Because ha is another word. It's another letter, okay? أُلَاءِ is another word. أُلَاءِ means those. These. Ha means ha is a kind of attention letter, okay? Attention letter, warning letter. It tells you, oh, this, yeah, this, for example, this, okay? It's kind of attention letter, I think, in Arabic, yeah. So, ha ulai. If you do not stretch the sound, it's okay. It can be jais. Ulai, that one is wajib, okay? Because ha, ula, alif mad, and hamza budar in the same word, ula. So, هَؤُلَاءِ You can recite this way. فَقَالَ أَنْبِئُونِي بِأَسْمَاءِ هَؤُلَاءِ Or you stretch all the three mat. Alright?
Yes.
So, إِن كُنْتُمْ صَادِقِينَ What rule are applied? What rule is applied actually on these both Nun Sakin examples?
إخفى
بوضر إخفى إن كنتم صادقين Alright So I want Fawad to recite this وعلم آدم الأسماء كلها You recite this part Then the next part So Hussein Ruhulla Will you recite this ayah for us? We'll be listening
Yes
And our brothers and sisters Make sure you're listening
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وعلم آدم الأسماء كلها ثم عرضهم على الملائكة
أحسنت
فقال أنبئوني بأسماء هؤلاء إن كنتم صادقين
Super, ما شاء الله رسالة صلوات for him ما شاء الله اللهم
صل على محمد وآل محمد
So thank you Hussein Rahulam Now I will be reciting okay and you all will be repeating then we'll finish this session بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
وعلم آدم الأسماء كلها ثم عرضهم على الملائكة
وعلم آدم الأسماء كلها ثم عرضهم على الملائكة
فقال أنبئوني بأسماء هؤلاء إن كنتم صادقين
فقال أنبئوني بأسماء هؤلاء إن كنتم صادقين
أحسن صدق الله العلي العظيم
صدق الله العلي العظيم
Okay, thank you so much. We learned about the challenge between the angels and Adam عليه السلام in the next two ayahs, okay? In the next two verses, we will, inshallah, talk again about the challenge, okay? Thank you so much. Make sure you refer to the Tafasir book, okay? Do not forget. And also, make sure you practice the Tajweed rules. So, thank you so much. Thanks, Allah Almighty, to you, first and foremost. Thanks to IRIB English Radio and Sevier International Schools, especially the students and the teacher. Thank you so much, brothers and sisters, for listening to us today. See you, inshallah, in the next session. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa alihi al-tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad wa ajjil farjah.
Thank you.
Let's Recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن
IRIB English Radio
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.